The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Fed can just print more money out of thin air, but the government's always going to be in debt to the Fed.
Everybody has questions that aren't being answered.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Dangerous World Podcast. Excited for this one, man. This was a blast to do. I'm kind of frustrated right now, though, because for some reason my damn computer is not allowing me to do my normal methods of recording. So if I sound a little distorted here in this introduction, fear not, the normal episode, and like I should say the body of the episode, is the normal standard of quality. Just for some reason right now, I cannot get my Bluetooth headphones to connect to this. And that's a critical part of this. But you didn't come here to listen to that bullshit. You came here to listen to myself speak with Joel Thomas of Van Tesla and Kill the Mockingbirds and a bunch of other things. And we talk about the Brotherhood of the Snake. And this was a wild episode, man. I didn't do a ton of talking. I actually did a lot of learning here. Joel did a great job just kind of telling me what was up with the Brotherhood of the Snake. What a fun guy to talk with, man. And what a just a down-to-earth, cool-seeming guy. No, I've never hung out with a dude. But what I've gathered from just like the, I think, two times that we talked, just a super nice dude. Seems very family oriented, a family man, a real dude, just a fun guy to talk with, similar to his co-host on Kill the Mockingbirds, Sean Chris, who I enjoyed the I think about three or four times that I've spoken with him now. Couple of cool dudes, and I always appreciate cool dudes, you know? So if you want to learn more about Joel's work with Van Tesla, I'm going to definitely share his link tree in the show notes here. So you'll see that. If you want to find him anywhere, you can pretty much just type in Van Tesla Music on any of the social media platforms. You'll find that I follow him on Instagram. It's him and one other dude. If I'm not mistaken, his name's Quan. I'm more familiar with Joel's work specifically here, but I know that they work in tandem. And a funny dude, I'm scrolling through his Instagram as I'm speaking right now, does some funny skits. We mentioned Denver in the Patreon, one of his non-binary characters. And like I said, I can't speak highly enough for what I know about the dude as of now. We talk about the Book of Enoch. We talk about the Brotherhood of the Snake, how it is the granddaddy of all secret societies. We talk about the bloodline of Cain, which has a lot to do with what the Brotherhood of the Snake is. And we go down all kinds of different rabbit holes. And again, I'm mostly listening. I think that what's going on here with some of this Brotherhood of the Snake, it touches on a lot of those ideas of the lizard people, right? Not in the sense that you would think, though. It's much less flashy, much more believable, I should say. You'll have to listen to it. And I hope that you're going to do that. And I hope that if you're not already subscribed to the Patreon, you will do so over there at patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. I haven't plugged in a couple episodes now. I'm going to try not to plug every time. But as you probably know, this is how I make the little bit of money that I do make doing this. We're trying to grow that. You know, have been real fortunate the last couple of days to be able to release quite a few episodes, and that'll continue for a few more days. But then it's getting back to the old grind. You know, it's really cool when people reach out to you and they want to be on your show. Next episode after like this whole week of like different episodes coming out after Joel's episode here on the Brotherhood of the Snake, I've got Julia's episode coming out talking about Laurel Canyon and some of the occult shit that was going on there, and just fun shit. So it gives me a little bit of a buffer where I can kind of take a step back, think about what I want to research, and then dive back into it. And that's what we're going to do. I've got a cool episode that I think I have lined out talking about the Department of Defense work when it comes to the gateway process and some of this manifestation stuff. I find it very suspect that they're talking about it and sharing it to the public. And, you know, I think I'm going to move away a little bit from the spirituality stuff, because I think I've proven my point over and over and over again. And it is very interesting that the spiritual leader of Vladimir Putin's daughter just was killed in a car bombing. Obviously, it's tragic anytime, you know, a child is brought into any of this horrible stuff. But couldn't the spiritual leader just manifest this to work out differently? I mean, if manifestation's so real, and if this guy is a master after all, you'd think that that wouldn't have happened. But hey, I think this is just point exhibit 7,452 of how, you know, this, there's more to this stuff. It's not as easy as all these yogis and all these dipshits and all these retards and morons and assholes make it seem. Mysticism is basically a bunch of frauds, and I'll stand behind that all the time. I think that and you know, I've had my experiences with some of these frauds, and they're not who they say they are 10 times out of 10. So I don't want to go on rants about this stuff, because I could see how this could become tiresome to hear me bagging on this kind of stuff constantly. But I do find it very, very interesting that we see some real life situations of this stuff going on. Maybe the reason that my damn audio isn't working is because I'm not manifesting it hard enough. Okay, I did check to make sure that there is no viruses on my computer, and I went through a few things to make sure that my shit was working properly. It's just not. It's just being a stubborn little computer. Maybe Bill Gates is angry with me right now. He's put me a little timeout. But you know, besides all of that, because this could turn into a full rant right now. Okay, I've had believe it or not, okay, I've had a little vodka with what is that? It's a sparkling water, lime flavored, that they sell at the Speedway gas station, which is a branch of 7-Eleven. Really lovely drink, just a nice light summery drink. It is still very summery over here, humid as hell, and you know, I'm feeling myself. Okay, so I could rant. This could be a full blown Ryan's rant over there at the Patreon, but it's not. It's a good episode with Joel Thomas on the Brotherhood of the Snake, and I hope that you enjoy it. I learned a shit ton of information here, and I can't stress how cool Joel is. Just enjoy the episode here, guys. Let's roll into it. Last plug I do have is just dangerousworldstore.com. I have had horrible luck sending packages to England and Australia. I'm going to cancel this. I have a package on the way to Australia that is taking forever. It's tragic. So if you don't have anything out there in England and Australia yet, you're not going to get any. Canada, I haven't had any issues with. I'm going to shut off world shipping over there at the website. It is a fucking problem. Not to mention it's like $30 or $40 or $50 depending on where you're getting shit and you know, how much it costs. So again, this is more of that logistical stuff that y'all don't care about. So just a PSA, if you don't have any merch and you are on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, you're not getting anything anymore. Unless your package is out. The one dude right now, he knows who he is. Hopefully. I'm working on it, brother. I will get you your shit. And if not, you're getting your money back plus some, because at this point it is a fucking problem and I'm pissed off about it. So let's not let that damper the mood, because you're about to have your minds blown, guys. This is Joel Thomas of Van Tesla and Kill the Mockingbirds. Enjoy the show. What is going on, everybody? Really, really excited to talk with Joel Thomas of Van Tesla here. And you also work with Sean Chris, who I've really come to like, even though I don't know the dude very well at all. And you do Kill the Mockingbirds with him, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Sean's a cool dude. Yeah. He got really cool, you know, just in the truther world. That's kind of how it happened.
Yeah, dude. And it sounds like you really know your stuff, man. I'm excited to get into this Brotherhood of the Snake, which I had not. Is it also referred to as Brotherhood of the Serpent, or is that something that's kind of like bastardized?
It is. So that is another name for it, Brotherhood of the Serpent. Also, the Dragon's Court would be another name nice. For it as well. Like it. And we'll get into the dragon bloodlines and what that means to them in this Brotherhood of the Snake. So it's pretty important. It ties into the Mother of Dragons and a bunch of really interesting rabbit holes there too.
Hell yeah. Well, dude, I always like to have people plug their stuff up front. I obviously mentioned the two things there real quick, but why don't you elaborate on those and just kind of talk about what you do, your work there. If you want to plug the stuff that you do with Tony Merkel too, who I'm a big fan of him, share anything that you want to share here with these great people listening.
Yeah. So, really essentially at the core, I'm a music artist. I've done music for a long time. I really broke into this style of music probably 2.5-3 years ago, really around when the pandemic started. That's kind of what kicked it off for me. I was always down truth or rabbit holes, but really from a different perspective. And I try to put this out there up front because everybody's like, oh, he's got to be control op or something. But, you know, I consider myself a former Freemason. I don't know if I can actually consider that. I think like you kind of like once you're in, but you can't step away from the group, which I've done. And great people. I don't want to put that out there because a lot of people get a lot of misconceptions with Freemasonry, but I was in it for the wrong reasons. So, you know, for me, I had goals and aspirations, especially being a musician. I understand the game of music. It's not just talent. Not to get to certain levels of music. It's sure. just not. It's impossible. I don't care what anybody says. I've seen it. And I'm not saying because I didn't reach some pinnacle. There were opportunities for me. I think fortunately for me, and I've told you this before when you're on our podcast, like I'm a Christian. And for me, I came to a point where there was a lot of roadblocks like coming up. And I think it was God really. Like I think that there was this fork where I was about to take that step, that road. There were things being offered, roads being offered to me. Like, I mean, I could have gone up the chain, you know, if I'd wanted to. I think life hit me in the face, though. There were a lot of, you know, obstacles that happened to me in life and just some things I look back on as awful things at the time. But it now look back on it, they were great things because it pushed me off of a path that I feel like I was going down. And I'm happy that I did because I really started, you know, really looking at people differently. I started looking at family differently. Because when you think about money and power and these different things, you start thinking about, you know, all of the awful things that you have to do to get there. Are you willing to do those things? That's selling your soul. You know, I don't necessarily think that it's always selling your soul. Per se, even though I do think that does exist, I do think though that you selling your soul can also mean just doing things that you don't want to do as a person to get things that you want to do. There's a lot of actors and actresses and musicians and athletes that say and do a lot of things you can tell they really don't want to do, but it's a company line, right? They're told to do it. Because you know, hey, if you don't do it, we'll take all this stuff away from you. I mean, you've seen it happen with musicians and just celebrities in general, if they decide to buck the system and they're blackballed, you know, from Hollywood or wherever else. I think now looking back on it, I'm glad I went through these roads. I learned a lot going through the Freemasons. I learned a lot about Freemasonry. I did, you know, because I was there, you know, even secret societies and just all the rabbit holes I went through for 15 years, you know, learning about all these things.
Were you a Christian heading into the Freemasons, by the way? I just wanted to ask that.
So oddly, so my dad's a pastor and I grew up in a Christian church. I really bucked the system when I got, you know, we kind of had a falling out over music. My family, you know, wasn't having it, you know, like
sure,
rapper, you know, whatever. And I left. I was like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, I struggled with music for a while. I was good. I had some ups and downs, you know, with music where things got close. I was talking to labels, you know, there was these things and then they would fall through. And I just got desperate. You start getting desperate. And I was also very, you know, hip to what was going on in, you know, these secret societies and everything. I wanted to be a Freemason. And I worked hard for a year to finally get invited to a place to then go through initiation and everything. And
wow.
It was actually one of the toughest lodges to go through in the area. As a matter of fact, it was a Prince Hall Freemason Lodge. So I was the first white guy to ever go through it ever. So they
all black dudes or what?
Yeah, all black guys.
Wow.
Especially in the South. Now you get up north, that's a little different in Freemasonry because Prince Hall Freemasons and mainstream Freemasons is what they call them. They interact a lot, like up north. It's very different, and you'll see a lot of different races in both. But down south, now it has changed in the past like 5 to 7 years, but back when I was getting in, it was still pretty segregated. Prince Hall was very open to white guys, you know, like or people of other, you know, races getting in, even though it's typically an African-American lodge. I went in because I had a really good friend of mine. He was black and we wanted to go through it together. And we got shunned at a white lodge. And I kind of said a phrase to a guy that I saw. And I can say it's no secret. If you go up to a Freemason, you say, ask one to be one. If you say that, they know what you mean. And I went through a series of a couple months before they even like invited me there. And, you know, they thought it was pretty cool that I kind of shunned a white lodge and, you know, because of my buddy and ended up going through one of the toughest lodges, like physically, mentally, all that. It was a lot like to go through. They push you to the limit. So it was, you know, and I looked at it as a badge of honor too, me going through something like that and getting to where I wanted to get to. And I knew there was more levels to it and more phases of what I could get to. Mm-hmm. But then again, life really came and hit me upside the head. I think that was divine because I think that I would have for sure went down a path that I had planned on going on. And I look back on it very thankful for a lot of those things.
Do you care to elaborate on that a little bit, or is it something that's kind of a little too private to share here? And by the way, dude, your music is phenomenal. Like, I don't think that you need a gimmick or some kind of like, you know, hidden hand pushing you. Obviously, to get to the very top of that industry, you need, as you said, something, right? A little extra secret shit going on behind the scenes. But dude, your stuff is great, man. Like the stuff that you and Sean do together, that Woke Summer song is sick, dude. Like, I love that.
I appreciate
stuff,
it.
Yeah. And I'm not just saying that, dude. Like I really do enjoy like just the take that you guys do, the little videos that you guys do too, dude, like just sitting on a park bench and or a picnic table or something and just sitting there and like just like real casual, chill, having a good time. And it's inspiring to say the very least. And it's very, very good, dude. So I just wanted to get that out of the way, make sure that I give you your credit. But I mean, do you care to elaborate on when you say life hit you upside the head, or is that something too private?
Yeah, no, I don't. It's not a big deal, man, for me. But, you know, I lost my job. I had custody of my kid at the time. I lost custody of my son at the time for some really shadiness that went on behind the scenes with some lawyers and judges and things. So it was tough, you know, for me. Now, looking back on it, did I put myself in some situations to fail because of what I was seeking? I think so. I think that was the crossroads. I think when all that stuff hit me and I lost everything, there was a crossroads. Either I was going to go down this road of fame, fortune, and these upper tier levels of knowledge, which ultimately I really wanted. Like I say that I wanted like money and power and fame and to an extent, but really it was the power of the knowledge. Like I love knowledge. I love knowing stuff other people don't know. Like you really,
yeah.
And to me, that was more attractive than anything. There's a power in that. There's a power in having this like esoteric knowledge, like nobody else has, you know what I mean? And to me, that was super attractive. I think when all that stuff happened, I think that was divine. And I think it was like, look, if you want it, you can have it, but you're going to lose everything else. Like you won't have like your kid, you won't have like your family, you won't have these things. And I think it was set up for that. And I think that those bonds were too strong for me, like with my kid. And I've got custody back of him now, but at the end of the day, it all backfired again. Like, I don't want to go into all the details here, but It was pretty shady how it went down, but I think it was divine in the sense of what are your priorities in life? Like, what's most important to you? And are these things important? Because if they are, you won't have the rest, because it is, that's how it works. Right. And I think a lot of these celebrities and stuff, their families are, it's for show. It's not real. They, you know, they may look happy and stuff, but I don't think a lot of that stuff's very real that they portray. It's just a video they post on something, or a, you know, a photo op or something like that. I think ultimately it's just a lonely, sad road. You may have a lot of stuff, and you may have this level of happiness, you know, tertiary, very on the surface, but I don't think that it's ultimately, you know, I'm looking for something more fulfilling now. And I think you're right. I think musically for me, I'm in a great place musically. Like, I feel great when I put out the stuff. You know, I say a lot of controversial things. That's fine. You can take it or leave it. But I do a lot of, music that's about family and about, you know, very conscious stuff too. And, you know, a lot of very, happy things too. I don't get just down the rabbit holes. Like, those are fun for me in music, but I do a lot of stuff that's more, geared towards family and togetherness. And I think that's important.
Well, dude, you know, you say controversial things. I think that you speak a lot of what you believe to be true. And I think that it's a lot less controversial than saying the N-word every other sentence. You know, I mean, agreed. I understand that, like, you know, it's different when you're a black dude being able to say that kind of stuff or using that in music. But I used to really enjoy that kind of hip hop. And now it's just like, I'm like, dude, this is really demeaning to an entire culture, even though it is some catchy songs. A lot of black people like that music, but it's like, you know, you got white people all around the entire world singing this in their head, and they're just repeating that word over and over again. There's something very dark about that. But we could probably do an entirely different episode on music, man. I love talking about music, dude. I love artists like Currency, who, you know, he's independent. It seems like he kind of,
it's good. Yeah.
Dude, I love that dude, man. And like, he just talks about cars, mostly cars and weed, you know? And it's like, dude, like, and he uses the N-word all the time, you know? But I mean, that's a serious exception for me. I love that dude's music and just the way that he goes about stuff. And it's, like I said, it's kind of similar. You're independent, he's independent. And it's a beautiful thing, I think, man, doing something that you enjoy. And then obviously, you know, taking some of the stuff that you do, your deep dives and your research, like this topic that we're about to get into, and you incorporate that into your music too. And I think that it's awesome, dude. So Van Tesla is your main project. And then,
yeah, I love Van Tesla. I do that with my buddy Quan Duke, and you were talking about black dudes. He's black. And yeah, it's funny. We were talking about the N-word. He uses it on rare occasions. He will, if it makes sense to make a point about something, and generally it's something social, like it's a social topic, and it's really just a reverse of, like, you know, how the word's used or how it shouldn't be used. So he's very particular about that too. It's funny that you brought that up. So he would totally agree with you on what you said about the N-word and the overuse of it, and how it's just, you know, it's become something that's really used to tear that community down, even though it was supposed to be an empowering thing. It really became something else, and really it gave, you know, a lot of white people free license to say it, because I mean, it's in music. Like, you hear it, like, you know, some songs I have it 20-30 times, and it's like, if you hear it that much, I mean, it's in your head, right? I think there's a magic with a CK to that as well. So I think that that's, you know, definitely.
When I forget what comedian said it, it was either Louis CK or Bill Burr, where it's like, when you say the N word, you're just making me say the real word in my head. You know, like when you say the N word, like when you actually spell it out like that.
I think it was CK. I think I heard him say that.
Yeah, that's dude. Great. It's like, it's worse almost. So it's just kind of funny, man. But So really appreciate what you do there. And like we mentioned, you work with Tony Merkel. I actually saw you on YouTube. I watched some of that documentary about the Dog Man. You were on that. That was dope.
It's really cool. It was on YouTube. It did almost 200,000 views. We actually pulled it because it's going to be on streaming platforms here pretty soon. So it'll be like Amazon Prime and some of that stuff like that. We're getting ready to move everything to streaming platforms, getting ready for this big Skinwalker documentary that's coming out at the end of October. So that's going to be wild. We were out in Utah for 5 days, and I can't say anything you hear about it, but people need to watch it. We have some stuff on film, so like, it's definitely worth it. What we did that was different than any of the Skinwalker stuff out there, we actually got on like boots on the ground, which we always do. And we go out there and seek these things out, but we always have great interviews. And one of the things that we wanted to showcase in this is the Native American perspective of all this, because this is where it started from.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where it all started from. It isn't this whole scientific thing that you see on the shows a lot. We wanted to get into more of the spiritual aspect, which we did. And man, we had some great guides and some great guys that had seen a lot of things, knew a lot of things, that were able to really break things down for us and really shaped out the documentary to what it ended up being.
Man, that's cool. Congratulations, man. Busy man you are. And I'm feeling more and more honored that you were willing to pop on my show, dude. Where do you want to start with this? Let's get into this stuff, man, because you said you got a lot of information. I'm fascinated,
man,
with the idea of getting into the oldest secret society out there, the stuff that really spawns all these other things, is kind of what you were telling me before. Where do we start, man?
Right. You know, I thought about this long for the past few weeks, because I really, you know, I got a lot of notes together for this too, because it can get jumbled up because it's so much. And sure, I want to make sure that I'm kind of conveying the right stuff that I want to convey about it. Because everybody's got their own idea about this, because if you do like the regular searches and you start looking into it, you're going to find a lot of stuff that's tied into Egyptian culture or Sumerian culture. And it won't tie into the biblical side of it, which I do want to get into, because I think that's where you're going to find most of the truth. And the guys that I've seen that have done a lot of research on this topic tend to go to that well, because it lines up with the Freemason aspect of it too. And that's kind of where everything spawned from, was the Brotherhood of the Snake, or the Dragon's Court. And Freemasonry, the tenets of Freemasonry are built on what they built. So maybe I start with the company line, and then I kind of get into, you know, what, you know, I think that it is. Again, it's open interpretation. You know, everybody is not going to think like I do. But I do think that there's a lot of truth to it. And I think that if people dig deep enough, you can find some of these really cool things about the Brotherhood of the Snake. And you'll start seeing where, like, oh, man, they put that in this movie or this medium I wasn't thinking about. Like, man, they use that from, yeah, it. A lot of stuff comes from secret societies. You'll see it in movies all the time, the symbols and everything else. And
checkerboard floors, dude.
Absolutely. It's in everything, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's hilarious. I laugh. Sometimes I'll just see a photo or something. I'm like, God, it's right there. Like, my daughter will send me stuff all the time. It's like, see, it's in a Disney movie. Like, what in the world?
Your daughter knows about a lot of this stuff too?
Yeah, she does. So she's very on this stuff. So she'll send me stuff all the time about it and say, like, you know, I can't watch anything anymore, Dad. She's like, I just see it everywhere. I was like, you'll get like me, like a veteran who doesn't phase you anymore. And you just kind of see it. You just move it along. Like, that rookie stage is like when it like bothers you and freak out about everything. I can't watch anything or listen to anything. But now I'm at the point I can enjoy the art of something.
Sure.
But still know that it's like controlled. You know, I can sit there and understand, like, you know, these guys that are putting this stuff out, like, they're probably involved with whatever.
And isn't that a cool thing to bond with your daughter over? Like, to just be able to talk shit about, like, all these, like, they think they're slick with this. We see exactly what's going on. I that's pretty cool, man.
She spots the Freemasonic square and compass like everywhere. She'll find it on cornerstones of buildings and stuff a lot. And I had to tell her about that too, that a lot of times the Freemasons will bless a building when it's being built, because it's part of Masonry. You know, that's what Freemasons are, they build. So a lot of times they'll put these cornerstones on these buildings or churches, and you'll see it. It's just like a weird like brick or something that's part of the brick scheme, but it'll be like engraved with like a date that they did it. So
very interesting. Keep your eyes on out there for Freemason little square and compasses and bricks, man. That's interesting. I'm sure that they're
everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, for sure. And so you want to give us the company line, which I think is definitely valuable. I think that anytime you're studying a group or a society, it is important to know how they want to project themselves to society, how they want to be seen, right? I do this with the UN, you know, the Theosophical Society, all these groups that say one thing and seem to do another, right?
So this is funny you brought up the society, because we're going to speak about them briefly today, because they are tied into this Dragon Court piece of the women part of it that birthed these the dragon's bloodline. So it's interesting because they actually talk about this a little bit. So we'll get to that too, but it's not a lot. We're not going to touch on a lot, but they are involved. Again, this is the oldest secret society. So everything stems from these guys. Like, this is what they do. And this is what they built the foundation. That's what they did, you know, to move everything this way.
Now, I was trying to do a little bit of research on this topic by just kind of listening to podcasts. I knew that you were going to be really taking the lead on this, so I just kind of wanted to brush up, maybe hear what other people were saying about it. I could not find one good enthralling episode that like kept me hooked for more than, I mean, literally the introduction, either the people are presenting it terribly or just it was just not making sense. There was one thing that I heard, and let me know if this is even real or if this was like some kind of a joke or parody on this, that there's these lizard beings that disguise themselves. They come from the planet Law. Does that sound real?
I don't know. I haven't heard the reptilian take on this Brotherhood of the Snake. So I haven't heard that. And I've done a lot of research on this. Now, to say that maybe, like, I know that my take on what reptilians are probably a little bit different than some people. So I think there's two
more metaphysical.
I think metaphysical, and I think a lot of fallen angel stuff, because they shapeshift. So I think that, and we're going to get into fallen angels today too, because they do tie heavily into this whole Brotherhood of the Snake. They started it, but I think they shapeshift into things. If we're going to talk about the interbreeding aspect of what fallen angels have done when it came to the Nephilim and also cryptids, I think there's a piece of that too, because it does say that they did interbreed with animals as well. So pre-diluvian or antediluvian, before the deluge, the flood, that's why the flood happened. It was because creation had literally been like overrun with so much that God was just basically like, yeah, we're out of here. Like, that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting. I knew that we could stop right there after I was mentioning the planet Law. If you hadn't heard of this, it sounded like some BS, but they were saying that like these reptilians basically invented like lawyering and the art of like manipulating the law. And they call it law because they come from the planet Law and all this stuff. So it just sounds like total bullshit. So we can just forget about that. But yeah, man, like I said, what is this company line, as you say it? Like, how do they want themselves represented?
Well, the oldest secret society, and a lot of them say that they came from Babylon, right? This is where it started, was in Babylon, but then it really picked up in Egypt with the cult of Aten, which is like the sun god, or Ra, and then Akhenaten, which was the 10th. Yeah, the 10th king of the 18th dynasty in Egyptian culture, which a lot of people think he could have had some sort of like Nephilim characteristics. If you notice, like a lot of these Egyptians have these like elongated heads and a lot of these characteristics, big feet, they're bigger. If you ever notice like on like in any kind of like hieroglyphs, they'll be bigger than like the rest of the people.
Interesting.
And they'll be around like weird beings and stuff. People think that there was a Nephilim aspect to it, or the hybrid aspect to it, the fallen angel human aspect to these gods, because their whole right. So again, it's a company line where it started, but it's not wrong in the aspect of they picked up the torch, or they continued the torch from where it really began. So I think that's where we get into interesting grounds of like where it really began. And this is just me, like I said, I'm a Christian, so I'm gonna speak from that aspect. I'm going to speak from the Bible. Book of Enoch, I think, is a great tool, but there's a reason it's not canonical, because there are some small disparities throughout it. I think it's in the 95% range of being like spot on, but there's certain things in there. And the one main one that I always bring up is the Book of Enoch talks about the angels built the ark, but that's not the case, because in the Bible, God told Noah to build the ark and how to build it. So it was kind of a weird little thing that was added in there. Kind of seems like a little like fallen angel, little trick, like, ah, we did it. You know what I mean? Like, so it, you know, it's always deception.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like the whole Sumerian thing, right? So Sumerian stuff's going to tie into this because a lot of these names and a lot of these Anunnaki, which were Nephilim, a lot of those names and stuff are going to pop up because when the Sumerian texts were found, which was when they predated it, they were done, I think it was like 250 years after the deluge, which would be like after the flood. So they're like the oldest known text. So a lot of people think that the Bible was a derivative of the Sumerian text because it was written later. So the pushback on that is, if you believe the Bible, God went to these people and told them to write it. So you look at like Moses, who wrote the first five books, like he went to Moses and told him to do this. So he gave him his inscription. Now I get the pushback on it. And if you don't believe in the Bible, I could see your whole point. You could say that Sumerians were the first, and that's where like all the other religions got their knowledge from. But wouldn't it be crafty, and wouldn't it be just like a Lucifer thing to create something? And side note, how do we know it? That the timetable's even right, because we can't necessarily believe whatever historians tell us because they've been lying to us for decades and decades. So you got to throw that little piece in there too, to like say, like, were these historians being right, or were they just giving us some sort of brainwashed thing to throw out the Bible once again? Because you brought up a really good point on our last podcast, and I thought it was really cool how you showed us like the New World Order, like, you know,
the 10 goals of the Lucius Trust.
Right. So when you do that, though, isn't it odd, though, when you find these secret societies and these New World Order plans and all this, they're very vehemently against Christianity. It's like it's almost like it's ingrained and it's in the foundation of everything they build.
Well, and Joel, they're against Christianity. And then they also say that like God's not real. Like it's a very like they're denouncing this religion that believes in God, almost worshiping the devil or the dark side of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And while they're doing that, they're also saying that none of it exists. It's very confusing. It's weird. It's strange. Yeah.
It's like CERN, right? Like it's supposed to be there for science, but yet they're doing all these weird, like, seances and rituals out there, like in broad daylight. You can see the videos of it. They're out there like marching around like they're in like a trance and like in robes and all kind of weird stuff. It's that piece where, like you said, it doesn't make sense. You're telling me that, well, we're separating science from God or whatever, but yet you're doing everything against that. You're showing us that you have some sort of religion in something. Yeah. And that's the part that never adds up to me. Now, I want to say this on the flip side, though. I'm not one of those like Bible thumper Christians that's coming down and telling you this is how it has to be or whatever. Also, I think the church has been highly infiltrated by the same people that hate the church. So I think they've done a great job at making the church unattractive to people and Christianity unattractive to people and make it seem like Christianity is an awful thing, because in a lot of ways, Ryan, it has been. You look at throughout history, the holy wars, like you can go down through everything. Like so many things have been started over religion, over God, over Christianity, really, when you think about it.
And then the pedophile stuff, all the horrible things. Oh my God.
I mean, the Catholic Church, I mean, just look at that. I mean, with just like you said, the pedophiles, it's insane. But I think that's by design. I think they want to tear down real Christianity, tear down the real family and home life that they want to tear apart with everything they're doing. But on the flip side, infiltrate the church and then make it look even worse. Make it look even everything they're saying on the other end, man. It's a long game. You know, Lucifer's got the long game here. He knows in the end he's going to lose, but he's got to take down as many people as he can with him, man. That's the goal. And he's been doing it since the dawn of time. This is nothing new, man. Like it really isn't. And that's where the Brotherhood of the Snake comes in, is this belief in the snake, right? We all know the story of
Samael, you know, the Garden of Eden.
Yeah, we know all about that. And that's kind of where it started from. It really, research that I've done, it really started with Cain. So we all know the story of Cain and Abel. You know, Abel was giving God the best of what he was growing and the best of what he had to sacrifice, while Cain was giving him, you know, the lower tier stuff. And so Cain was wondering why like Abel was getting blessed, and he killed Abel over it. He was jealous. So he was the first murderer. And ultimately, Kane never had remorse for this. He was very angry. He got shunned, and he decided that he was going to do whatever he could to build up opposition against the Adamic side, or the Adam's line of people, which was God's holy people. Now, I want to kick this back to Adam. While Adam was in the Garden of Eden, he learned the seven sciences. And I'm going to bring up the seven sciences.
The trivium here. And quadrivium, is this what you're talking about?
So this is a little different, but I'm going to bring these up real quick here so I can go through them correctly here.
And yeah, I learned about the trivium
seven sciences are.
Well, I learned about the trivium quadrivium. I know you're saying it's different from another dude that is, I guess, still a Freemason. So yeah, it's something very tied in with that stuff.
So the seven sciences is grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, which that is the fifth science, which is the basis. That's what the Freemasons love, right? It's geometry. Yeah. Everything's on geometry. Music and astronomy, which they twisted astronomy into astrology.
Yeah.
And I believe you and I talked about the old spiritualism weird stuff last time. And how
dude,
just...
I argue with everyone about that, dude. Anytime, I never miss a chance to say how weird the New Age stuff is, man.
You're on it, though, because I think a lot. Now, I will say this. A lot of good people
get fooled.
Go down that road. They do, because they feel like that it's connecting them to this like spirit realm and the spirit world. But what they don't understand is they're opening themselves up to these like entities, man, that are waiting for them, that, you know, that they don't understand. And listen, I've been down these roads, man. I've done it. I've done the spirit walks and connecting with these entities. They're there. They're waiting for you, and they will talk to you.
Well, dude, the dark entities are more predatory too. So like, even though you're trying to open yourself up to something positive, doing yoga to a full moon or something like that, these dark entities are lurking. Whereas the good entities are probably, I don't know exactly how it works, but I would imagine they're out there actually doing good. And these dark entities are just waiting for some sucker to open themselves up, and then they're going to jump in. And dude, yeah, like you said, I know a ton of really nice people that fall for this. And I say it all the time. The devil isn't going to come to you, or these demons or whatever they are, aren't going to come to you saying that they're going to rape you in fire for eternity. Right. They're going to come to you as a friend, as a loved one, as a pretty woman or whatever. I'm not saying women are evil, but like just the idea of something very positive and appealing is what's going to get you roped into this stuff. Success, fame, all that stuff. I mean, all that stuff sounds good, but you know, it definitely will get you, it seems.
Yeah. And to your point about that, man, I mean, just when you open yourself up to these entities and you think they're good, and a lot of times they disguise themselves as something very good too, like especially initially, you know, I think that's where a lot of these UFO contacts come in too. I don't think that they're actually aliens. Like, I think they're fallen angels, or we're gonna get to this a little bit with the Nephilim, and I'll just break off real quick and break down the Nephilim. Nephilim were the sons of God in the Bible that had sex with women, that created through Cain's line these giants, these men of renown, the heroes that we have heard about. You know, these, you know, giants in the Bible. They ran the antediluvian world, essentially. I mean, they were, yeah, I think, you know, you see something that's 30 cubics, you know what I mean, compared to a human. I mean, and then they, you know, they obviously diluted their bloodline a lot too. And this is where we're going to get into this bloodline of the snake that we're talking about.
Real quick, what was that term that you used? Antediluvian? Was that it?
Yeah. So antediluvian, that means pre-flood. So that's before the deluge. Yeah. So that's like pre-flood. So really before, you know, the flood, I mean, the world was berserk. You know, in my opinion, and I've listened to some guys way more knowledgeable than me about this, but in my opinion, I think technology might have even been better before the flood than it is now. And that's where you get your Atlantis stuff in. That's where you get Poseidon with the waters. Now, Poseidon is a Nephilim. Like, that was what a lot of people have coincided to figure out. A lot of these great, again, heroes of renown, these titans throughout, you know, Greek culture. I mean, all of these things were what were considered the Nephilim back then. So these were, it's a wild, and the Bible talks about the Nephilim after the flood too. So a lot of people are really like, where do they go? And how did they show back up? And a lot of people think it came through Nimrod's line, which he was Ham's son, which Ham was the son of Noah, and he was on the ark, and he was one of the guys that came through. Nimrod was just like a, you know, they said he was a very like powerful king. He started the Tower of Babel, and that was when, you know, God dispersed everyone through languages. All the languages.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And now there's a language app called Babel. Teaching which people different languages.
Wild. Again, man, you know, Babylon ties into a lot of this too. But Babylon was later, you know, like Babylon to me was like, you know, after the flood. It wasn't like, you know, all the stuff before, like the Sumerians and all that. It was kind of like post, like Nimrod was a big part of like starting all that. I don't think Nimrod was a Nephilim. I think Nimrod married in with these Nephilim. And I think the Nephilim, I'm gonna get a little weird here. I think that there's a lot of theories that went around like where the Nephilim went, right? Because they show back up. Now we could say it was another incursion, right? Fallen angels came again, had sex with women, and created more Nephilim, which I think it could be the case for sure. It could be the case. Also, we're talking about like Hollow Earth and cave systems, and we get into like portals and stuff like that. I think maybe they're, you know, real fathers and mothers issued them out of there before the flood came, and then kind of brought them back into the earth, you know, after the flood.
Wow.
You know, that's just a theory. I'm not saying it's the truth, but it's one of the running theories that goes around in these circles.
So, okay. I like it.
Yeah. So the brother of the snake. So Adam was taught the seven sciences, but he was taught it in a pure way by God in the Garden of Eden. When he ate the fruit and they knew the knowledge of good and evil, they were kicked out of Eden. They still had to procreate the earth. Adam still knew the seven sciences, and he was going to teach his sons, which he did, the seven sciences. Now we're going to throw Abel out of the situation because Abel's done. Waxed them out. Cain was had already learned the seven sciences. So Cain, along with fallen angels, was very pissed off, and he wanted to corrupt the seven sciences. So he had his first son, Enoch. Now Enoch, he named his first city after. If you do some research in some outside of biblical text, but some of the guys that have done a lot of, you know, deep research, even back in the day on this subject, say that Cain built, and this is funny, 66 cities. So great number, right? So yeah. So he built 66 cities. He ended up taking one of Adam's daughters. They had a lot of kids, obviously, back then. They were living for 900 years. I mean, they had a lot of kids. He ended up taking one of his daughters, and he started procreating. Enoch. Now, Enoch is a wild one, man. That's really where the Brotherhood of the Snake started, because Enoch was the one that really busted out with a lot of really cool shit, hieroglyphs. Like, he was the one that started writing, and he started all of these things. Now, people and Freemasons like to twist the Book of Enoch into saying that Enoch that wrote that was the Enoch that further down Adam's line that walked so closely with God that he went straight into heaven. So that's what they want to say with that, but that's not the case. The Enoch that wrote the Book of Enoch was this Enoch. Now,
so there's two of them.
There's two Enochs. Like, here, I'm gonna see if I can screen share this for you. I'm gonna show
and
you
while
this.
While you're pulling that up, dude, and maybe you can answer this for me. I'm very skeptical. I'm not skeptical is probably not the right word, but I'm curious as to why this book is left out of the traditional Bible, but then now it's made pretty available for quite a few of us that are willing to go and look for it, right?
Can you see that?
Yes, it starts with, okay, Adam, and then you get Cain, Abel, and Seth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you'll notice this weird thing, so you've got Adam, Abel, you know, he was slain. You got Cain on this side, goes straight to Enoch. We're just talking about Enoch. You got Irad. You got Methusael, Lamech. He's very important, and he's also very important in Freemasonic circles as well. But we're going to jump back over to Adam's line on Seth. So you got Enos, which eerily similar, kind of sounds like Enoch a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I see where you're,
Canaan,
where you're going.
You got Mahalalel. You got Jared, you got Enoch. Now, this is the Enoch that everyone thinks that wrote the Book of Enoch. You got Methuselah. Now see, we got another one over here. Wow. You got Methuselah, Methuselah, and you got Lamech on this side. So the theory is that on Cain's side, a lot of these guys would take the name or a version of the name on the other side. It was part of this long game of confusion. Even the right, and there's a lot of theories too that maybe even the writers later on, with outside of biblical text, obviously had changed some of the stuff too. So you've got this weird correlation here, and you're like, why do they have very similar names? But I think that was part of a game to delude this Adam bloodline. So if you know anything about the Adam, the Seth bloodline, that is the line that Jesus came from. So that was something that one, the fallen angels wanted to dilute, and we'll get to the Nephilim, which is further down, but the fallen angels wanted to dilute that line. Cause I mean, they had to. A lot of people think that Noah, and I'm gonna jump real quick forward to the deluge, that Noah, when God told him in the Bible that he was essentially perfect, he wasn't talking about that he was perfect in like being holy. He meant that his DNA was perfect. He was undiluted, because by that, I believe it was the seventh generation of these guys is when the Nephilim really started going crazy. By the 10th generation, they had already got into the Seth bloodline too. They had diluted all the bloodlines. They had gotten to the point where it was just an absolute mayhem, just a shit show. So that was kind of when God was like, we're going to go ahead and like reboot this, and we're going to put Noah and his family in the ark because they have that clean DNA, and we're going to move it along. And that's essentially how that happened. But back to this line of Adam with Cain and Enoch. So Enoch, like I said, he did the sacred carvings. That was kind of his thing. In the book of Enoch, he talks about that the Watchers, which were the shadowy group that's in the book of Enoch, they're the fallen angels, how that they taught him all of these things in the book of Enoch. Well, people thought that those were the good angels or the angels from God that taught Enoch. That's why Enoch's not in the canonical Bible, because there was those disparities. They weren't talking about the same Enoch. It was being disguised as the same Enoch. Also, there hasn't been anyone actually, you know, people say Enoch wrote it, but nobody knows exactly who wrote it. I'm talking about the people who think that Enoch on Seth's side wrote it. So that's why the people that have dug very deep, that start looking into this Brotherhood of the Snake, have tied it to Enoch from Cain's line.
So is the Enoch of Cain's line, is he a good guy or like a bad?
No, he's okay. Pretty awful. Yeah, he.
But then the one on Seth's side is a better guy.
Correct. So the one on Seth's side, he is the one that walked so closely with God. He literally walked into heaven. He never died. Like, okay. God just kind of just like, I don't know, dimensionally or whatever, just put him into this other dimension.
And so what you're saying is this bad one has been mixed up so much with this good one that a lot of people are looking to this Enoch that comes from Cain, and they're thinking that he's good.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think I just want to get that clear. Yeah, I think that's part of the long game sure. to do that, because, you know, that's kind of a Freemason and a secret society thing to dilute things as much as possible.
Yeah.
Invert things to where it becomes this, it just becomes not true anymore, or it dilutes you so much to where you just don't even know what's true anymore. If that makes sense.
That's fascinating, man. It really is. I had looked at that. I'd seen that there was two separate Enochs, but I didn't even put two and two together. Like when I was looking into this myself, because I was looking into the whole like Lucifer versus Satan thing, how right. like the Freemasons will say that that's like the good side of the devil is Lucifer, the bad side of the devil is Satan, even though you'd think that there isn't such a thing as a good side of the devil. And getting into like the Lilith and Samael stuff versus Adam and Eve. And so I was just not putting that together. So that's very interesting.
So another side note to Enoch. So a lot of people wonder how Enoch could have written this, and it you know, got through the flood, right? So again, this guy was, he was the precursor of starting the sacred symbols that we see in secret societies, because the fallen angels wanted a way to, what is a good word for it, to make these symbols elite, to make it an elite thing. So it's where you get this elitism from. These guys think that they know more than the rest of us, and it's been passed down through generations. So Enoch created these hieroglyphics, and he wrote them on these pillars. So there's a legend, and this is in Freemasonry now, that pre-world, that he buried everything on Mount Moriah, was inside of Mount Moriah. So this is what they said happened. It was a lot of weird stuff in there, like, you know, gold tablets, and this is all part of the Masonic craft. They say this is, you know, but again, they're referring to Enoch on Seth's side. They're not saying that it's Enoch on Cain's side, but he wrote all these things. He wrote in these, on these pillars, you know, that's where they get Boaz and Yachin, the two pillars from Freemasonry. That's what, at least, again, that's the Masonic company line. But if you look at the Anderson legend, which James Anderson, he was a Freemason, he was very high up. You know, he was in the late 1600s to early 1700s. The Anderson legend, and also George Oliver, the Oliver legend, and he was like late 1700s to early 1800s. They wrote a lot of text and a lot of knowledge about Enoch, and they broke down Enoch as being the son of Cain. They said that we are from the Cain bloodline. This is what we protect, is the Cain bloodline. Oh, now, wow. now Freemasons have totally, they pushed away from that, and they said, oh, those guys were crazy. Those guys are lying. Those guys were big time in their day. Like, there's no way that they were making this shit up.
Well, they did the same thing with Albert Pike. They say that he was too satanic, right?
Absolutely.
One of their highest regarded people.
Well, and you should say that about Aleister Crowley as well, because Aleister Crowley got kicked out of the Freemasons. If you do the research on Aleister Crowley, really? He was a Freemason. They said he was too much for even them. Like, because he was a druid too, and like just a lot of different things. And like Aleister Crowley, like they kicked him out of Freemasons. Again, because Freemasons are the gateway, right? They're gatekeepers. Like they don't want a lot of heat on them. They want to look good. They want to look holy. They want to look like they are, you know, even though their whole thing is, we don't have a set religion. You just have to believe in God, yeah, or the architect, is what they say. But they lean heavily towards Christianity. They want to promote that image. So these guys were not doing it, but listen, these guys were academics. They weren't doing it to cause dissension in Freemasonry. Like, their whole goal was just to be kind of recorders of what had been passed down. So that's all they were doing. They're just recording this knowledge. They're not doing it to lie, right? So when you dig deep with these guys, they talk about this Cain bloodline, this Cain bloodline. Now, you want to talk about the pillars? Everybody says that it's Boaz and Yachin, and this is from, you know, it stems back to King Solomon. It's not the case. This brings back in Lamech. So really, the pillars were built on Lamech's sons. That's where a lot of this came into place. Now, I'm going to pull up Lamech's sons here.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you don't mind explaining that a little bit for people like me, yeah, who are not sure what that is.
Yeah, for sure. So, Lamech. Yeah, so Lamech had four kids that we really know, like the ones that were the main ones that they talk, like these four names were brought up in the Bible. You got Jabal, Jubal, Tubal-Cain. You know who Tubal-Cain is, and Naamah, which was the sister. So when they talk about the pillars, they're generally speaking about Jabal and Jubal, even though some people think it could be Tubal-Cain, could be one of them. We don't really know. We don't, you know, that's one of those things that's never been really explained. Like, even like the Freemasons never talk about, but I know that Oliver and Anderson specifically talked about that the pillars were built on the sons of Lamech. So that's the crazy thing. Their whole, all of their work that they wrote about was in like just the complete opposite of what the Freemasons are presenting now, which is pretty wild when you start digging around back to it.
Well, it is interesting too, how much, I mean, you said something that stood out to me there, how the Freemasons are, they try to make them look good. They do a lot of the charity stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some noble things that the Freemasons do for sure. But in conspiracy circles, for like beginner conspiratorial type people, they think that the Freemasons are the end all be all, because it seems like every damn person in high level society is a Freemason. And that seems intentional by these higher up societies. They, while they're simultaneously, as you say, trying to be painted in a fair light, they're also kind of demonized.
Yeah, it's for people that don't really know. So I can say, just being, you know, in those Freemason circles, generally speaking, guys are pretty good. You know, you don't really see a lot of the more devious aspects of it until you start working your way up, or you know certain guys that are in your group, and you just know. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, you know, I knew by... It's almost like they could spot out if you're down for the cause too. You know what I mean? There were certain guys that kind of knew why I was in there, and they definitely came to me with a lot of ideas, which I won't speak about, but it's just stuff like that that happens. But as far as the charity work and all that, man, I'm telling you, like, we had our lodge was in the middle of not a great area, and it was by design, because it was there to help the community. So like, when school would start and these kids didn't have stuff for school, we had backpacks ready with everything in it for school. Mm. We had, every holiday, we were cooking food for people. We had plates you could come by and get, free turkeys we gave out for, Thanksgiving, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, community service is a huge part of it. You do X amount of community service where you even get in. So like, that's a big thing. And a lot of those guys are in it for great reasons. I mean, they look at it as a fraternity, which it is. It's just a brotherhood. I would say in the 90 to 95 percentile, those are the guys you're going to get in there. You're not going to be getting this whole
pillars
devious and plot and all that. Like, they know about the pillar. Like, we all know about, you're given a lot of information initially that you have to like learn, that's not given to the public. But a lot of those guys don't even know what they're reading. Like, they don't know what it means. You know, I got a hold of one of the books that they gave me pretty early on, and I'm like blown away. I'm like, oh, this is everything I was looking for, like right here. But none of those guys really understood it. But that goes back to what we're talking about, Enoch, creating these symbols, creating these things that only the elite minds could understand. Only the elite minds could see. It's like when we're talking about looking at movies, right? You and I could watch a movie and see probably a shit ton of symbols in it, where maybe another person wouldn't see anything, wouldn't even know what was going on. It's the same. It works in the same way in those circles as well. Like, not everybody's privy to everything in those circles.
So you're saying a lot of these Freemasons and people that join these societies, they are kind of like the, I don't want to say ignorant, but the kid that's not picking up on the symbolism while they're, you know, reading through the texts and things like that.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just simply going through and they're like, yeah, I agree with this. I believe in charity. I believe in all that. I think it's interesting too, to point out, you know, all the charity. I mean, the mafia did a lot of charity too, right? And because when you are doing some shady things at a higher level, that 0.001% of any organization, I don't care if it's the Vatican, the Freemasons, any of these groups, it seems like the top levels of any society are kind of interesting, right? I mean, they're kind of getting into some of that dark stuff. Same with the mafia. I mean, all these groups, they definitely they have the lower level people portraying this really nice image, it seems. Like, again, the Vatican is a great example. But the high levels are doing some shady shit.
And it's been that way since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And when it boils down to what Cain wanted to do, he hated God, hated him, because he wanted to do it his way. And he didn't want to do what God asked him to do, even though God was being pretty like generous. You know what I mean? So he wanted it his way, and he was corrupted. And he wanted to corrupt the seven sciences, which he's done a great job of doing. I mean, geometry is the tenets of Freemasonry. So everything's about building. So everything they do is about building. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, when I was going through all that, it can be in some ways good, because when you're talking about, you know, building yourself up, you know, building yourself to, you know, building a foundation and all that, you know, those things on the surface are good. When you start looking at where these things came from, though, and like what the end result is, you know, if you're building yourself up to what, you know what I mean? Like, sure. I think that's where, you know, kind of it all came from. But I'm going to kind of shift into this bloodline of the snake.
Please.
Because that's really what the Brotherhood of the Snake is built on, is this really diluted bloodline of this Nephilim. It started in the seventh generation of Cain. So this is when fallen angels came, and it was said that they found the women, you know, beautiful. They lusted after them. So if you do a lot of research about angels and stuff, they're, you know, metaphysical, but they can take on different forms. And it's through scripture that they can have sex. Like, it's not something that they can't do. There's been gets a little wilder when we start getting there. A lot of people think that Mars, and there was a planet called Rahab that was in between Jupiter and Mars, that was really the headquarters for Lucifer when he was first kicked out of heaven. And Mars was also inhabited by angels. There was angel civilizations on Mars. A lot of people talk about that too. So, you know, before the earth was created, the universe was already there. It just said the world was without form and void. So there were, you know, angels have been around forever. So they had like civilizations and things like that. And especially when the one third of the angels flipped on God, you know, they left, they were kicked out of heaven. So they had to find a place to reside, right? So yeah, there was been talk about there was wars on Mars, which is, you know,
planet, is very, that's the god of war, right? Mars is isn't that Mars the god of war?
Yeah. You're talking about from a astrological aspect.
Yeah, and then I think Mars, the Greek god of war, isn't he?
I think so. I don't know for positive. Yeah, don't quote me on that. I don't know.
I can double check. But yeah, no, it's very interesting. And when you start talking about these planets and angels, I think about Mormonism, because don't they believe that when you die, if you're a good person, you get your own planet?
Well, I know. Maybe, but I think, don't they in Islam as well? They live on a planet with like a shit ton of virgins or something like that. That's one of their things.
Oh yeah. Too. Well, they get a bunch of virgins. I don't know if they get their own planet, but a lot of these religions do borrow from each other. And for the record, you know, Mormonism and Freemasonry are very, very interesting when you start looking at how those two are tied together. Right.
A lot of people say that a Smith that started it was a Freemason as well. So there's a lot of things to do, a lot of ties there too. So you're not far off when it comes to that train of thought. But yeah, there's some stuff out there about planet Rahab. It's very interesting, man. I mean, I don't know how much truth's in it. I like the concept a lot, because there's an asteroid belt between the two planets, and like, where'd all these rocks come from? And it was kind of, you know, Rahab's been used in the Bible 11 times. Only 5 times was it ever used for Rahab, who helped the spies who eventually helped take down the walls of Jericho. The other 6 times, people think that they were referring to the planet Rahab. So it's very interesting when you start going down that rabbit hole, man. I found it interesting, and it's just, it kind of ties into like my whole thing about fallen angels being these, you know, aliens that people think are going to be aliens. You know, it would make sense, because in a sense they would be extraterrestrial, right? They would be on another planet. They would be, you know, inhabiting. Nobody talks about the angels, right? Like, we don't know a lot about them. They were around way before we were. You know what I mean? Like, God decided that, hey, we create these humans, and one third of them got kind of pissed off about that, jealous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, Satan wanted to, you know, he thought he could be God, and he found out quickly that couldn't happen.
Yeah. So, very interesting. Yeah. So it is the Roman God. I just wanted to.
Roman God. Okay.
So that I don't sound like a complete idiot saying it's the Greek, but I mean, they tie together so well. There's like Greco-Roman, all kinds of things. So, but yeah, no, it's very interesting that you mentioned war going on Mars. And then I wonder if that's where that draws from.
Yeah. And so, you know, we're getting to this, like, you know, Nephilim bloodline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of when these Nephilim start coming. So it gets wild. I mean, there are these giants, and they're essentially where we get our grasp of superheroes. Like, I think that's where we've gotten, you know, the idea of superheroes from. I think it's where, you know, superheroes are kind of a derivative, like, you know, the Titans in Greek culture or all of these stories. You look at every culture, they've always got these stories of giants. You know, I was just in Utah and I met a guy who was coming out there to check, like, energy readings on the property that we were on. You know, we were out there, you know, checking all kind of stuff out. And this guy's like known for that. And come to find out, he's like a Nephilim, like, scholar. Like, this guy's like, he actually sends us to the Valley of the Three Kings. So we go to this valley, like in Utah, and there's these petroglyphs from thousands of years ago with six-fingered giants on these walls next to, like, little people. It's crazy. And it's like, this stuff's, it's not just in, like, one country, it's all over the world, like, everywhere, like, it's in everything. Also, when you talk about giants, there's been so much, and I'm sure you've heard of L.A. Marzulli, but, like, Marzulli talks about this a lot, and he's got a book where he's got pictures all in the book of giant bones, where, like, you can go to places overseas where they'll, you know, everybody says that, you know, the big thing is that all the giant bones that are found over here or are found over here are always sent to the Smithsonian to go to die. We never see them, right? They go and hide them because that would screw up any, you know, part of evolution that they want to push to us. So, like, that they don't want to have that out there, because that would put a huge spin, like, what are these giant bones? Where do they come from? Like, what did they evolve from? Where's that? You know, that would mess all that up. But there's some places overseas that actually will allow you to come and, like, hold the finger or something. These fingers are, holy, like, shit, you know, ridiculous. Yeah, he's got pictures of a lot of stuff in the book. There's places I go out online, it's not hard to find. There's plenty of pictures because guys back in, like, the early 1900s were taking pictures and stuff, putting in the newspaper. There's plenty of newspaper, sure, like, clippings of, like, these giants that were even in North America that were, like, 50 feet tall. Like, you're just like, where's this stuff coming from?
That's crazy.
But, man. And when you talk to Native Americans, it's so wild. When I was out in Utah, oh my God, man. It's like, we would be talking about something and just somehow they'd start talking about giants. And I'm like, yeah, the redheaded giants. Like, yeah, people still see them up in these, like, up in the Rockies and stuff. Cause you can see the Rockies over the Mesas where we're at. And they're like, yeah, you know, we all know about the giants. He's like, the Native Americans had to barter with them back in the day because they had tribes of giants as well. So this was all going on in North America. Like, it's just, like, commonplace. Whereas now we're totally brainwashed and totally, you know, taught, quote unquote, things in school, you know, that they want us to know. They don't really want us to know history. They don't really want us to know what really happened. We don't know really anything out past maybe 100 years. Like, the last living person, that's really what we know. We only know what they tell us.
Yeah, history changes every 100 or 80 years or so, right? I mean mm-hmm. This is well documented that if you can get your hands on books from the 1800s, you'll get a completely different set of information than you would now.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man, for sure. So these Nephilim bloodlines were created. I'm actually going to pull this thing up real quick.
Yeah, let's check it out. I like the visuals, dude.
Actually, I don't have a visual for this, but I'm pulling this.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So we were talking about the Dragon Court. So the Dragon Court women, this is where these are the women that were considered, like, the first string of women that brought in, like, the Nephilim, right? There was a lot of them, but these were, like, the revered, like, women. So you had, these are all Sumerian names too. So this is kind of coming from that whole Sumerian part. So you pull a lot of Nephilim knowledge from Sumerians because they called them the Anunnaki. So that's where we get a lot of cross-referencing, and we're able to pull some of this knowledge from that.
Well, guys, I got some more awesome stuff on the Brotherhood of the Snake with Joel Thomas. Again, what a cool fucking dude. You can tell the sincerity and, like, the shit that he says. Just, I mean, I don't know why I think this dude's so cool. I just do. get the rest of the conversation over there at patreon.com/dangerousworldpodcast. We get deeper and deeper into the brotherhood, and it just is who the Freemasons seem to want to be when they grow up. So hope to see you over there at Patreon, guys. Thanks so much for the support.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.